Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, freedomain.com. Chapter 6. "You sure this ain't gonna be weird?" asked Derek for the fifth time. Robert pulled into a narrow parking space on the fifth floor below ground. He was inordinately proud of his ability to pull into tight spots without slowing down. "Confidence is king, baby." "Hell, bro," he said, mimicking an Appalachian accent. "I don't know. I guess we're all just trying to be sophisticated and stuff."
"It's just a matter of fit, right?"
"Yeah, sure, of course. You guys fit. Me and Helen fit. Like gloves."
"Good," said Derek, biting at a hangnail on his thumb. "You're handling this like a champ, a pro."
Robert shrugged tightly. "My bro is hanging by a thread. I think I'm working for Satan. You and Chloe are barely on my radar, bro. No disrespect."
"None taken. It's strange, though. I want to praise her, but I don't want you to think you missed out. She's totally solid."
"It's fine," said Robert decisively, unbuckling his seatbelt. "Water under the bridge." Derek paused for a moment, then also got out. The oily smell of a subterranean garage slithered into their senses.
"Well, it's just a drink and some bites. Old friends, shuffled deck."
Robert clapped him too hard on the back, feeling sudden anger.
"Ow," grimaced Derek. "Man, you gotta hit the gym, bro," smiled Robert.
"How do you know who you are if you don't even lift? You're just a fear machine riding the rails of compliance."
"Like you're such a hard body,"
pushing his fingertip into Robert's puffy belly.
"I'm like Scandinavian weightlifter strong these days. No more abs. I might need to lift a tractor or two."
Derek laughed, and the tension diminished somewhat. Upstairs at the restaurant, the five gathered at a narrow table with a snow-white tablecloth. As usual, the two couples sat side by side facing each other, while Shane, Robert's brother, sat awkwardly at the end.
"So," said Robert expansively, "how the hell is everyone?"
Chloe smiled.
"Well, good, thanks."
Helen glanced at her and said, "Pretty much the same as this morning."
Derek said, "You grilled me on the way over, so to keep Helen up to date, the exciting life of accounting has me gripped in its fist. I'm making money, but losing my freaking eyesight, baby."
There was a pause. Shane was staring at his plate.
"Shane," prompted Robert, "you wanted to get together, feel like saying something?"
"It's a 12-step thing,"
mumbled Shane darkly, then cleared his throat.
"But we can get to that later."
Robert sighed heavily.
"No, Shane, we'll get this out of the way now," he sighed. "You gonna apologize again?"
Shane's face colored.
"Well, I owe you, all of you, bad."
Helen shrugged.
"Hasn't affected me much, to be honest. But through Robert, it does. Just get it done, Shane," said Robert impatiently.
Chloe put her hand on Shane's forearm.
"Take your time, though. How are things going?"
I'm backsliding,"
said Shane softly. Everyone but Robert leaned forward to hear him better.
"Not with the drugs. With life, I guess. I, like, got a job at this Hallie Ann, just warehouse stuff, with a bunch of ex-cons and, well, hardcore drug recovery guys. Everyone asks me what the hell I'm doing there. I don't know."
Chloe said, "How long have you been clean? Is that still the word?"
"Yeah, that's fine."
Shane's eye suddenly cleared and his voice rose.
"I got a call from Regina the other day, that bitch! Hey," cried Robert, "keep it down."
Shane appeared not to hear him.
"She wanted to know if I had seen her passport. So she's shown up in an adult magazine and some sheik is flying her out to Dubai for..."
He shuddered.
"I couldn't have scripted it better myself."
"Oh, gross," said Derek.
"Forget her," said Chloe. "How are you doing?"
Shane refused to raise his eyes.
"You mean down here at the bottom of Trash Planet?"
"I'm king of the underworld, baby. I rule everyone who never follows the rules. Do I have her passport? If I did, I would have sold it to some voodoo witch to break her freaking back.
Calm down, said Robert sternly. Man, you're going to end up with even more to apologize for.
Shane took a deep, shuddering breath and sat very still as the waitress took their orders for drinks.
Robert tried to get everyone to order food as well, but the ladies demurred, citing confusion, a complicated menu, and female nature.
After the waitress left, Shane took another deep breath and leaned forward, his eyes moist.
Yeah, so sorry. Like you care about Regina and her goddamn passport. I just fell into the wrong hole.
He laughed bitterly.
And you know, I've spent a lot of time apologizing to everyone, just freaking groveling. And yeah, I've screwed up, you know? Yeah, you know. But not you, Helen, or you, Chloe, but the Wonder Twins here. I know I'm older, but hey, couldn't you see that I was falling into the wrong hole? You all just leaned over and waved as I freaking dropped. Bye-bye, Shane. It's like that question in school when we were kids, remember?
Shane's voice was rising. Everyone sat very still. The waitress approached, then withdrew quickly.
What happens if you fall into a hole that goes right through the earth? Continued Shane bitterly. Everyone stuck up their hand and said, oh, I know, you go down past the middle.
He traced the imaginary fall with a hand.
Then you bounce back up, way up, then down, then up, and then you finally stop wobbling and just hang there in the middle.
He winked at everyone.
But I got it. Right away. Didn't even have to think about it. Because it was a freaking premonition, bros. Oh no, you fall, and the gravity of the world increases above you, right? And you just slow down and come to a complete stop. Right? At the center of the world, the earth. And you just hang there as far as possible from the surface, and all its people just hang there forever, floating, stuck.
Shane was almost panting, his voice lowered to a whisper.
And Regina rhymes with fun, remember? She pushed me in, bro. She was the hole, and she pushed me in, and I just vanished. Did you notice? It seems, my friends, that you did not. So, who was supposed to notice that I was there for like years and then not there for months? Who noticed I was gone? Mom? Dad? You? Rob? What about you, Derek? No, forget that. You were too new. I hung around, right? I dematerialized, bros, and you all noticed nothing. Like you were waiting for the bus and I got taken down by a lioness and you noticed nothing. Didn't look up from your freaking newspapers. All right,
said Robert heavily. All right.
Would you feel better if I apologized for not saving you from purple-haired nose ring Regina? Would that help you lower your voice?
Shane's brown eyes were wide, cynical.
I deeply appreciate this sincerity, Rob. Warms my heart.
Robert leaned forward.
You need to take responsibility for your own life, Shane. No one forced you into that relationship.
He lowered his voice.
Or the drugs. You could have called for help at any time, bro. You think I would have hung up on you? You kept all your secrets from me, from Mom and Dad, from Derek, from everyone. You decided to go it alone, my guy. And that's where it got you. You didn't need anyone, right? Mr. Solo, Mr. Too Good for Any Advice. Your choice. Your choice.
Derek said, whoa, Rob, easy, easy, kiddo. Robert took a deep breath.
Sorry, everyone. It's easy to lecture when you haven't spent half a decade waiting for the call from the ambulance and wondering where to get naloxone on the black market. Oh, yes, my hero, snarled Shane. My caped crusader, Mr. Status Merchant, Mr. Social Climber, Mr. Trade in My Girlfriend for a Harder Model. At least I understand my addiction, bro. Yeah, this is an intervention, but not for me. I can't go back and undo Regina, but I can warn our good friend Helen here about Robert and his addiction. You see, I...
The waitress put down their drinks and said, "I'll give you some time," and fled again.
"You see," said Shane, ignoring his club soda, "I am what is called the identified patient. I am the obvious addict. Rob, here is not obvious. The unidentified patient."
Helen's cheeks turned red.
"Oh, shut up!" cried Robert. "Goddamned loser!"
Chloe clutched Derek's hand under the table. There was silence around the table, an eye in the storm of general social chatter.
"He's a status addict," said Shane softly. "He didn't bother rescuing me because I was low status, Helen of Troy. Regina was low status. He couldn't dirty himself, besmirch himself, because we were trash, and the stain and the stink might stick to him. And that's fine. That's okay for you. As long as you never stumble or burp or gain 8 pounds or get too depressed to have sex or don't show well in the mannequin window he calls a social circle. Just a bunch of shiny cars in a shiny showroom that look great but can't actually be driven anywhere. You see? A salesman with nothing but words and greed and a hook baited with money and prestige and conditions. See, our parents don't love unconditionally. So I fell for Regina and he falls for you."
"Shut up!" hissed Robert, his face red. "Do not compare Helen to that trailer park trash you called a girlfriend."
"Chloe is a better person, though," said Shane softly.
Chloe opened her mouth, then closed it again. A slight fire of vengeance burned deep in her brown eyes. Helen laughed.
"Oh, better is so subjective, my friend. For who? For what?
For whom?" corrected Chloe. Helen shot her a venomous look.
"Nitpicking is so attractive."
Derek cleared his throat loudly.
"Guys, come on. We've got some tension, I get that. But seriously, this is getting ugly."
Shane cackled.
"Unveiling an ugly statue doesn't make it ugly, Derek. Go back to feeding off the scraps of Robert's leftovers."
Derek's face darkened. He laughed awkwardly.
"Oh, that's how addicts roll, right? Unbelievable levels of emotional manipulation."
"Terrorists," murmured Helen, brushing her blonde hair back.
Shane said, "That's just a word for someone no one listens to, emotionally." Robert leaned forward. "Okay, just so we don't get kicked out of this restaurant, like permanently, what is it you want?"
"You've known me close on a quarter century," murmured Shane, his eyes suddenly wet. "And you have no idea.
That's just passive-aggressive bull."
"Oh, Shane, you're so crazy that no one could ever possibly know what you want or need."
Shane raised a finger.
"Don't placate me, bro. Don't placate."
Shane seemed to run out of energy all of a sudden. The waitress appeared.
"Sorry, I need you to order. It's mad busy at the moment."
To the obvious disappointment of the waitress, they ordered a few quick bite appetizers. She smiled tightly and vanished again. There was silence at the table. The tiny black hole of contemplation in the mad chaos and noise of the braying, drunk, golfing cacophony that surrounded them. They all suddenly heard the endless noise of their society. The barking laughter and self-conscious preening that surrounded them like a sea of subconscious echolocation predation. All the silent sentences that growled and pulled everyone forward in their endless race to the endless grave, like slaves hauling on splintered oars whose groans could never be heard by the coiffed and bleached aristocrats sauntering carelessly above deck. "I am better than you. I need something from you. Look how sexy I am. Love me for my spiritual essence. I need you to look up to me. I am superior mostly due to my innate gifts and unchosen family connections." The din, the noise, seemed unbearable all of a sudden. The scraps
of conversation felt obscene, like listening in on a priest receiving prison or deathbed confessions. A spiraling escalation of desperate noise, the clamor of the unloved, seeking to climb on the ashes of each other's hearts, slipping and stumbling and bellowing laughter over an endless advertising chyron of glamorous success. The men tried to sleep with the women. The women tried to bag hotter men than their friends. The waitresses and waiters praised and flirted for money. The gray-haired manager circulated like a begging courtier, licking the boots of his patrons. People charged into the restaurant and argued about seating with the hostess. The drab, pudgy people on the sidewalk cast envious glances into the glass-enclosed shark aquarium of endless striving. And everything and everyone was trapped in a perfect whirlpool of falsehood and manipulation and status. And no one could ever stand to be alone. And everyone dreaded waking up at 4 a.m. and not being able to get back to sleep, because they could not hurl money at the merchants of distraction to escape their own thoughtlessness, their hollow emptiness, and fear of authenticity. And no one could show any nervousness at all, even in the end stages of their former civilization, when debt and dissolute money and unfunded liabilities rose up like a bear over a crying crib. They babbled and played and typed and dictated and fiddled while their cities burned. And no one was ever allowed to talk about the simple math of their own coming executions. That they all participated in bribing the poor to stay out of their neighborhoods. Here, have as many children as you want. Get free rent and subway rides. Just stay away from us. And they all knew that the money was running out. And they all knew that the bars of the raging poor were almost chewed through. And rather than restrain spending and retrain ignorance, they withdrew to their cloud castles, their silent, new-treed streets that ringed the hellscape of the inner cities, and fled out into the countryside to cottages and resorts to get away from the well-armed math of their own demise. And everyone around them, babbling and bribing and biting, knew all this simple math. That civilizations end, not through force or war or corruption, but through math. Numbers were the armies that marched and stole and destroyed without resistance. An enemy that cannot be named will always win, which is why silencing words is the first and final act of invasion. You can defend your house from invaders, but not from ghosts and radiation, and odorless gases. Numbers were the conquering army of the modern world, just as they had always been. If one side of an evenly matched battle can kill 10% more than the other, it wins. Numbers win. If a man's immune system can kill enough bacteria or cancers, he lives. If not, he dies. Numbers. Birth rates. Numbers. Falling IQ. Numbers. Rising obesity. Numbers. Demographics. Numbers. Lowered academic standards. Numbers. Taking more calories than you expend. Obesity. Taking fewer. Starvation. Numbers. Those cultures that evolved by living or dying through numbers could no longer talk about numbers. Do I have enough food to feed my family over the bitter winter? Numbers. Invade a body, disable the immune system, death results. Make a system unsustainable, prevent people from talking about that unsustainability, the system dies of its own silenced inertia. And like tinnitus, the silenced nerves trigger endless whining and screaming and growling. Greed replaces sustainability. Status replaces morality. Sex
replaces family. Travel replaces wisdom. Desire replaces happiness. Money replaces love. Perfection of the flesh replaces beauty of the soul. Dominance replaces conscience. Impressing strangers replaces respecting family. Noise replaces conversation. Stimulus replaces contemplation. And most of all, giddy suicide replaces sustainable self-respect. All these thoughts raced around the table of five, an instinct bequeathed by their ancestors, currently crying out from their dusty graves, unvisited for generations, to stop and think of the future. Not of just their own petty selves and lusts, but of the world to come. A wealthy young man thinks of consumption. A lonely old man dying of consumption thinks only of his regrets. The world is an ornate gift, shaped and handed to you by your ancestors. To pursue only your own pleasures and preferences is to burn through a glorious inheritance for the sake of tickling and appeasing merely mortal nerves. Everything around you, around these five young souls, is the result of the deferral of gratification. And it is all destroyed by those greedy for giddy joy in the mere moment. A man stores food for a long winter by deferring gratification, by working more and eating less, and one greedy stomach can end the entire bloodline by sneaking food for the sake of passing midnight hunger. Respect numbers, or numbers end us all. Robert took a deep breath and said, loudly, but not too loud for the desperate clamor of the restaurant, "Okay, let's reset, all right?" There was a moment of sudden, sober silence, which miraculously spread through the entire giant, ornate end times dining room, as if everyone took and held a breath at the same time. Derek said, "You know, every 7 minutes there's a lull in conversation, kids, which you can fill by reminding everyone that every 7 minutes there's a lull in conversation. It's a self-healing wound."
"Not now, hon," murmured Chloe, looking slightly queasy.
The waitress brought the appetizers and set them down without a word. She was clearly training them not to return, willing to lose a tip in the here and now in order to make room for more hungry and generous customers in the future. Numbers. Shane looked up, oddly at peace for a moment. The shiver of eternity and avoidance that had sprinted up the spines of friends and family gave them all the addicts, something in common for a moment.
"What?" he said, without a shred of tension or emphasis. Robert paused. Unguessed words are always where the honesty lies, but they are hard to shoulder through. "I did fail you, bro," he said softly. A ripple of feeling ran around the table. Robert raised his napkin and spat out his bite of calamari. "I'm not hungry." No one seemed to be breathing. The noise had returned to the restaurant, but it was muted, like rats sensing a possible predator. The beast of truth that might be stalking its natural prey, distraction. "I did," he repeated. His face went limp, like sails abruptly emptied of wind. Everyone waited. No one had anything to say. Well, they were now suddenly aware that they had nothing to say, rather than just endlessly saying nothing, as was their habit. Robert was toying, playing, like children do very seriously, with his next thought. Is or but. What I did is bad, or but I have an excuse. No one dared to even breathe, let alone speak. Robert took a third route, an offshoot of the second. However, he said, I'm not mom or dad, and for someone to speak, someone else has to listen, bro. Shane said nothing. He just stared at the white tablecloth, at the slowly congealing grease of the appetizers. Below the table, his fingertips ran softly along the rough edges of the fabric, a self-soothing gesture he practiced as a toddler at night, wrapped in his swaddling sheets.
Come on, man, Robert said suddenly loud. I made endless fun of her. Twitchy witch, remember?
I do, said Shane softly. It was a lot of jokes.
Derek said, hey, Shane, I remember you half-dragged us to her birthday party with her. Kind of a coven, bro. Candlelight, purple lipstick, blackout curtains. She wanted to pull out a Ouija board for the love of Odin. I told you, man, woo-woo turns into whoa-whoa, remember?
It all seemed like a joke, though, said Shane slowly. Like some sketchy carnival ride, you know, isn't really gonna keel over.
And it's not like you all never dated anyone sketchy.
It wasn't Regina, though, murmured Robert. He repeated it louder.
What was it then? Asked Helen, a little coldly, but not without curiosity.
Shane stared at his younger brother as if squinting into the white sun over a nonchalant firing squad.
I don't know, said Robert. Like, mom and dad just kind of float around each other, sparring, sort of. I'm not sure I want what they want.
You said that on the beach, said Chloe sadly. Helen shot her a look.
Robert said to his brother, what do you want out of life, Shane?
Shane laughed bitterly.
Not being asked what the hell I'm doing there by stumbling ex-druggies at Sally Ann, that's for sure. Robert raised his voice. Stop being glib. You want a serious conversation? Stop just doing that.
I'm sorry, said Shane instantly, automatically. Me too, said Robert, suddenly softening.
Helen said, should we stay? I don't know what I can, like, contribute to this.
This is my life, Helen, said Robert, not turning to her. Shane narrowed his eyes. The short form of Robert is Rob.
What is the short form of Helen?
Robert's fingers closed into fists.
Stop it! Now that's a robust defense, cried Shane. I wish you'd had that for me, Robert snorted. Everything I say just gets deflected. Let's have a real conversation, you say. And then I try to be real and you just bob and weave. Do you all see it? Is that just me?
He leaned forward to his brother. You know that all this nonsense just leads to self-destruction, right? Do you see that? Do you know that?
I do,
said Shane simply.
Why not turn from that path towards what?
I don't want what anyone has. What I wanted, well, that's just, there's no path, Art.
Yeah,
said Shane with infinite sadness. He laughed softly.
I wanted beauty once upon a time. Remember that? I drew dragons and knights and princesses and good old Teutonic forests, nymphs, dryads. Beauty, nobility, I guess. Post-Regina, though, my hand turns dark every time. Devils and eye sockets and toothless homeless. I can't move my fingers towards beauty.
Possession, said Chloe suddenly. Her eyes were defiant.
Yes, you were all so sophisticated, but these questions have all been answered for thousands of years, millions maybe. You just don't want to listen because, I don't know why, vanity, maybe, responsibility, even you, Derek, my boy.
What are you talking about?
demanded Helen.
Ah, Eve, laughed Chloe, suddenly free of fear. Shane, you met a demon. You were tempted and you sinned. Yes, it's also unsophisticated. I know, Fedora wearers. But nothing you have done for the last 5 years has cured this disease. Right, Shane? And you don't have to believe in the God thing. I know that's tough for the secular crowd raised like, well, the apes you descended from. I struggle with it too, sometimes. But evil is real. Everyone condemns everyone else, but no one seems to believe in evil. She turned to Robert. You think any of this is real or new or novel? It's one of the oldest questions in the Bible. Am I my brother's keeper? He met a demon, a witch. Maybe she serves powers even she doesn't understand. Shane.
Chloe leaned forward, her voice lowering.
She promised you everything, then left you with nothing, right?
Struck by the sudden intimacy, Shane could only nod, his eyes brimming.
That's the oldest devil's bargain. I'm not asking you to believe in a guy with horns and goat legs, but the myth, the story, the analogy, if you like, that's very, very real. What did Regina offer you?
Shane swallowed.
Enlightenment. How? Basically, sex and drugs.
Chloe nodded slowly.
Right, right. You didn't have to earn it. What?
Chloe struggled for words.
It just happened to you like a pill to lose weight. You don't have to choose or pursue or struggle. Enlightenment happens to you. You're passive, acted upon. It's like you don't have to study acting or go to auditions. You're just discovered, like in a diner, Shane scowled. It happens, though.
Chloe shook her head slightly, throwing off his distraction.
What was the enlightenment for? I mean, what was its purpose? What was it going to give you?
Shane quoted Regina's long dead words so accurately they could hear her small-town Nikina accent.
It's like 20 years of therapy in a single night.
Chloe's face was tight, emphatic.
Right. For what? What was the therapy supposed to do for you?
Shane's face crumpled.
Make me successful. Give me visions like Dali, Picasso. I could paint what the drugs revealed and become famous. Warhol, successful, like what?
Like Robert,
murmured Helen, a strangely satisfied look on her face.
Yeah,
whispered Shane, and they all leaned forward.
Yeah, maybe.
Robert said,
I'm not really that successful.
Careful, warned Helen.
Shane took a deep breath, lost in that most ancient of battles, cynicism at war with tears.
Oh, right, lawyer boy, got your own office, a not bad-looking girlfriend.
Chloe interrupted him, raising a hand to silence Robert.
But Shane, he's just another kind of Regina in his own small way. That's why I left him after Wasega. He's tempting,
Helen said.
What he offers is real, just not everyone wants it or can handle it.
Derek opened his mouth, then closed it again. Chloe turned to Helen.
I'm guessing he makes, what, 120K? You are an admin assistant clocking in at, what, 40? You make a third. What does he get in return?
What do I bring to the table?
Sneered Helen, tossing her hair.
Honey, I am the table.
Chloe opened her mouth for a rebuttal.
Everyone could see the acidic words forming on her tongue. But then she cocked her head, as if listening to other words.
Shane, she said, why does your mother love your father? Robert barked out a laugh.
Here's how to turn a lunch into a dinner,
Shane said, I don't know. Like Rob says, they're always sparring. He makes a lot, though, right? Shane exhaled in a rush.
Oh, yeah.
But she works. Ah, sure, I get that. She stayed home to raise you. Robert said, no, not really. Chloe's eyes widened. No? I thought you said, I think I lied back then. What do you mean?
I guess I wanted to not be the kid whose mom went back to work. We were raised by our grandmother, but she died, so we went to an aunt. She got remarried. Then we had a nanny. She was too pricey and not super stable. Then we went to daycare. Oh, I'm so sorry. Why? Snapped Helen. Nothing wrong with daycare. They're professionals, unlike moms who just make it up as they go along. It's not natural. Chloe struggled to silence her next words, but everyone could hear them anyway. Chloe wore no makeup. Like your face, Helen. Nothing about this restaurant is natural, said Helen tightly. Chloe turned back to Shane. She offered you a shortcut, Shane. That's really tempting. Robert offered me one, too. I know. Hey, cried Robert. Do you want to help your brother? He closed his mouth. Shane, you have to find something about yourself that someone can love. You know, like, it has to be something about goodness. I think we love goodness. Like you said earlier about your art, beauty. You got infected with ugliness, the ugliness of this shortcut. I hope I'm making some sense. I'm not even talking for myself directly. The only thing worse than Regina's broken promises would have been if she didn't break them, right? I mean, if you'd been successful because of... You're playing dead, like a soldier on a battlefield, so you can live again, be reborn. I'm not religious, whispered Shane. I get it, said Chloe urgently. But the stories explain something, you know, something in our minds, our hearts. Nothing else seems to work, does it? You're close to the bottom, love, but there's always a further down. Come on. You have to push against the shortcuts, Shane. Your salvation doesn't lie in Robert apologizing or in breaking Regina's back through her passport. That was kind of funny, though. What does it lie in? Whispered Shane. Fighting the evil. The easy. Not in Regina, not in Robert, not in your parents. Then where? Chloe put her hand on Shane's forearm. Stop playing with the tablecloth, Shane. That won't save you either. Okay. What will? Doing good, murmured Chloe. Shane's eyes were wide, frightened, cynical. What does that even look like? The opposite of your heart, I think. Follow your desires, your soul dies. You need some discipline. Come on. Show us a picture of your room, Mr. Bachelor. Pigsty, I bet. You eating well, exercising, getting regular sleep? Video games and afternoon breakfasts, right? You want to be happy? Stop being lazy and ugly. Shane stared at Chloe for a long moment, then threw back his head and roared with laughter. The laughter washed through the restaurant, and everyone, except Chloe and Derek, had a sudden urge to flee.